Welcome, Helen Thomas, back to Takes on the World, and you have my very best wishes on this, your 91st birthday.
Thank you.
On June 29th, the Falls Church, Virginia News Press, where you resumed your career as a journalist in January, carried an editorial from which I want to quote a few lines before beginning our interview. "It's been a climb, still in process," the editor wrote, "back to her rightful position as one of the most storied and legendary American journalists ever, a pioneer for the cause of women in the professions dating to the 1940s, and a resolute, unbreakable, uncompromising champion of the truth. We have been honored to have her as an exclusive weekly columnist since January, when after a six-month hiatus, she decided to relaunch her career at age 90. End quote. And I say amen to that, and I'm very honored to have you again as my guest today.
First 90 years are the hardest.
Well, listen, let's begin with your take on what some have called the debt deficit debacle.
It's a word for it.
Right. You watched from your Washington apartment the back and forth between the Obama and the Democrats and the Republicans and their Tea Party wing. What were your thoughts, and how do you view the deal that was finally agreed upon?
I thought it was a catastrophe. I don't understand why billionaires and millionaires shouldn't be taxed more to take on our debt and help the people instead of taking out of the hides of people on Social Security and food stamps.
It seems that both parties, not just the Republicans, are on the way to erase the important social gains of the New Deal. Have you seen anything like this before?
I have never seen this before. I've been in Washington since 1942, and I think that I have seen now such a lack of responsibility. I don't know who these lawmakers are and what they think is their role.
Well, one would think, or I guess a number of people had hopes, that President Obama was going to represent something different, but he had many opportunities to speak to the American people and tell them the truth, for example, about Social Security.
Well, I think that he doesn't ever grab those kind of opportunities. He's afraid of leaving the center and alienating some of the voters. I think he lacks that sense of leadership and courage.
Was he perhaps, in your mind, somebody who was like picked so he could not only bail out Wall Street and put a human face on U.S. Adventures overseas, and like Nixon going to China, be the one to eliminate, or not eliminate, but roll back Social Security and Medicare?
Well, incidentally, this is his birthday, too, today, 50th, I guess. And I don't think he envisioned his own role in that way. But I think that I assume too much that because he was black, he would be liberal, and he's not liberal. I'm shocked.
Well, you also assumed, in your Playboy interview, you had some higher hopes also for Hillary Clinton.
Oh, well, I cannot tell you that I should have known where she'd be. She's only following orders. And, you know, for her to woman put out the word capture or kill when people are dying, giving their lives, killing, it's unbelievable. Again, another assumption of mine that a woman would not do that.
Well, it's ironic that, yes.
Mothers, yes. And wives, I mean, whether you like these people or not, were automatically dubbed enemies.
Well, if she was president, we probably have attacked Iran by now.
I think you're right. You're absolutely right.
I notice what happens is another phenomenon which you might comment on is when we have a Democrat in the White House, the progressive movement, or let's say the anti-war movement, kind of vanishes. And here we have the President Obama in six wars. I think Iraq, or Pakistan, Afghanistan, Yemen, Somalia, maybe, oh, Libya, yes. And we see very little activity. How do you account for that?
And none of these wars have been explained truthfully. And we have had so many lies. The credibility of the administration is so terrible. The passivity of the public is unbelievable also. I mean, why are we killing and dying? Tell me why, everywhere. Yeah, we have never truly explained going into Iraq. All lies. No weapons of mass destruction, no ties to Al-Qaeda. Sure, a horrible dictator, but how many do you have around the world?
Well, of course, he was a dictator most of his career. Well, he was not only helped to get into power by the United States, but by he was our ally up until he went into Kuwait.
Exactly. That's true.
And you had pictures of Bob Dole and Donald Rumsfeld going over to visit him?
Right. But also, Kuwait was part of Iraq. It was part of the greater Syria, really. So this whole business of, you know, the way the country and the world and the Middle East has been cut up by our friends.
Well, that's right. Kuwait was actually cut off from what would have been Iraq in order to keep the Germans from getting a railway line to the sea.
Right, and lots of oil.
And that, just like Saudi Arabia, the Saud family was made rich in order to protect first British and then American oil interests.
Exactly right. And that has motivated the Allies in every sense of the word. Too many people are dead. Too many killed.
And since we haven't had a military draft, most people who don't have families involved don't pay any attention to any of our wars.
That's true. There's always a person. That's why Nixon finally ended the draft, because it was building so much hatred of him.
Exactly. It was a brilliant move, although it's true people were opposed to the Iraq War, which is one of the reasons that Obama got elected, but not enough to really keep the pressure on. And of course, they didn't listen to the fact that he was going to expand the war in Afghanistan and Pakistan.
He had one chance to get out of Iraq the day after he took the oath of office, and also out of Afghanistan, Yemen, wherever we are. I just don't understand. He cannot explain it.
And now the papers are filled with stories that the United States is putting the pressure on Iraq to ask the Americans to stay in Iraq.
Yeah, well, we never leave anywhere. We're still in Germany.
Still in Germany, that's true. And the Germans are really under threat. Well, let's change the story to something that I speak about quite often, is the role of the Israel lobby. And the last time in our politics, American politics, the last time I saw you, I was in Washington during the AIPAC convention, and Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister, is in town to speak to AIPAC and to the U.S. Congress. And after I saw you, he spoke to Congress and received 29 standing ovations. After having insulted the President of the United States.
He spit in his face, practically.
Yes, and
he showed Obama who was boss.
And he, it wasn't the first time. What was your response when you saw or heard about these 29 standing ovations?
I think that every American president should know when they're being insulted, by their own people. They showed that the lobby has total control of our Congress, except for maybe a few members.
Usually it's about a half a dozen, it seems. You have votes like 404-6.
And that is really that is such a tragedy.
One of the things that stands out is that the American people are not really aware of these votes because the national media doesn't record them, or doesn't report on them, I should say. You've been working in the media all your life. How would you look at the media when it comes to the control of the media, or the intimidation or the influence on the media by the Israel lobby?
They play ball with the Israeli lobby. I mean, they've never been exposed of why are they there and why are they so powerful and why do they own these congressmen and senators so much, even when it goes against every moral ethic of how you deal between nations. I mean, these Palestinians have been practically wiped out. The Israelis have taken, by sheer force, 78% of the Palestinian land. American Jews now, or Zionists, are buying land, building their summer homes, swimming pools, and so forth in the Palestinian land. It belongs to Palestinians.
In an interview with Playboy in April, the rather somewhat hostile interviewer who wouldn't accept any sandwiches or drinks from you, I noticed, acted as if your criticism of Israel and the criticism of the lobby it was an indication that you were crazy. He asked if you had lost your mind.
I have to laugh. I'm a Semite. I've come of an Arab background too, but I know many, many Zionist Jews who certainly know that the Israelis have been totally wrong in rampaging other people's land, taking their water, their orchards, taking their lives where they've been there for so many years,
well,
centuries, many centuries.
One of the responses that you made in that Playboy interview was a question that really needs to be asked to those who support Israel and those who wonder why the Palestinians have resisted and are not willing to recognize Israel's legitimacy as a Jewish state, as opposed to recognizing its existence, which is very different. And you asked, what would Americans do if their land was taken, like the Palestinians' land was taken? And I thought that was a very telling question. Maybe a comment on that.
Well, I think people fight for their land. We see that everywhere in the world. Whether they like their leaders or not, they will fight for their land. Where in the hell are they supposed to go?
And this is something obviously... all around the world, we would see this. We actually, the Algerians had the French in there for 130 years.
Thank God for De Gaulle. He had the guts to leave.
Finally, it's interesting, when the French went to Algeria, they were not supposed to adopt Algerian culture. It's this kind of, when Algerians come to France, however, they're supposed to adopt French culture.
I know.
It's a kind of a double standard. You also distinguish, you said, in that conversation between Jews and Zionists, or being, let's say, anti-Zionist and anti-Jewish, which, as you notice, were two different things.
There's a difference. I'm anti-Israeli for what they do to the Palestinians. I certainly have many Jewish friends. I think they can attest to that. I hate to have to say it in such a condescending way, but it's true.
This is something I've actually spoken about on my program myself, because it's a difficult thing for people who believe that they have been the ultimate victims to accept the role that their fellow co-religionists are victimizers today.
Well, they're not victims anymore. Tell me, they have enough information and communication to tell us wherever they're being victimized for their religion. It isn't happening, and they know it, but they're using this. It's a very nice talking point for them to be the eternal victim.
Well, certainly, when you have 13 members of the U.S. Senate and usually about 30 or 40 members of the House of Representatives who are even elected in areas which are not predominantly Jewish, it would seem that there would not be a problem, certainly in this country today, and it doesn't really seem there is a problem anywhere else. So this is something that is laid and held over the heads of the American people, that any moment Israel is going to be attacked by Hamas and Gaza, by Hezbollah, where they have the fourth largest army in the world, and now they're building up for another war in Iran.
And they have a whole nuclear arsenal, which no American official will admit publicly.
Now, isn't that interesting? You asked both Obama, President Obama, and Secretary of State Clinton about Israel's nuclear weapons, which is openly discussed in the media, and yet neither of them...
No American official will admit it.
No American official will admit it.
But that for many reasons. They can't criticize Iran for wanting building weapons or anything else when they tolerate Israel.
But
and it knows that Israel at Dimona is building many weapons. Its own people say so.
But what does it say when an American president, no American president, can honestly say that Israel has nuclear weapons? Is that an indication of control or what?
The fact that no American president will say it?
Yes.
They made the American officials made a pact with Golda Meir never to reveal that Israel had a nuclear arsenal.
Well, it's interesting that John F. Kennedy, President Kennedy, was adamantly opposed to Israel getting nuclear weapons and was distressed, very upset that Prime Minister of Israel, David Ben-Gurion, lied to him. But after, surprise, surprise...
The American officials made a pact with Golda Meir never to reveal that Israel had a nuclear arsenal.
It happens to be, unfortunately, the truth. And we see time and again that an American president, even when Obama simply says that the basis of negotiations will be the borders of the Six-Day War with mutual swaps, which is certainly unjust for the Palestinians, but has been said before even by President Bush, he has to go on the defensive because suddenly Israel's friends in the media, in the Washington Post, the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, start attacking him and distorting even what he said.
Well, it's they know who the enemy is.
You were in the White House sitting in the front row. You were the one who asked the hard questions of the president. You asked President Bush why he could justify being in Iraq after all the different reasons he had given for going to Iraq had proven to be false. And then you were put in the back of the classroom.
Par for the course.
What is it that keeps the media like acting like trained seals when they're speaking to the president?
And when something is so obvious, so the contradictions, the hypocrisy, you tell me.
Since you've been gone, there has been one or two people who actually have spoken up, at least to the presidential spokesperson. But what future do you see in the media? People are no longer reading newspapers like they used to. Unfortunately, it seems the Wall Street Journal now is since Murdoch took it over, has become the largest circulation newspaper in the United States. What does that tell you about this country and the media?
I didn't know that. I think that's tragic.
I didn't either. I read it somewhere. I didn't believe it, and I Googled it, and they have over 2,100,000 subscribers compared to 1,800,000 at the New York Times.
Murdoch is worried to death that he may be exposed as he was in London.
Do you think they have the guts in this country to go after Murdoch? I mean, he has Fox.
Money talks in this country, and I don't know whether they'll go after Murdoch. I mean, they may catch him red-handed in terms of wiretapping and so forth. I think if he does, that could really be exposed.
Well, we see in terms of money, we have a Supreme Court that has approved virtually unlimited donations by corporations to our political campaigns.
That's right, thanks to the Supreme Court.
And they have reinforced the notion that corporations have the rights of individuals, although they don't get called to serve in the army, and they don't get driver tickets for speeding. But it seems impossible at this particular point, since the politicians live off the campaign contributions they get, to change the system.
That's true.
I mean, they talk about campaign reform, and yet then they, in the legislation that they write, they find loopholes. And even when states try to enforce restrictions on campaign donations, the courts overturn that. Do you see any prospect for changing this anyway, unless the people mobilize themselves?
Well, I think the people should hit the streets at some point if they're being denied their rights.
Well, certainly there has been no... people get upset and they go on the internet, but what accounts... how do you account in your mind for the United States being so unique that when there are major attacks on the public welfare in countries in Europe, for example, in England or France, Spain, Greece, and in Latin America, that people are out in the streets, led by the trade unions. But in the United States, people just kind of complain to each other and do nothing. But what makes Americans different in this regard?
They don't feel personally affected that closely to take to the streets, and I do think they have some trust in leadership.
How is it, or maybe is it, do you think they may have just given up?
No, I think they trust the government.
I know the polls, of course, with this latest debacle, which apparently has not convinced the Wall Street, or the stock market, that things are going to get better. We have every week there's 400,000 new people signing for unemployment. That's like 20 million plus a year, with a minimum of new jobs. What do you see for the future of this country?
Well, I always operate on hope, and I always think we'll reach our senses and. Better part will prevail.
Well, you've seen so much. You go back to John F. Kennedy in terms of your becoming a White House correspondent. Just personally, how did you become the White House correspondent?
Well, it was an automatic reflex, I think, because I was a woman reporter at that time, working on women's things, and family became very, very important when JFK was elected. So the whole country became very interested in the Kennedy family and in Jackie. So it gave me a good break to go in. But once I went into the White House, I was covering everything, national, international, and dogs, all kinds of pets and little children.
And you've seen them all.
Mm-hmm.
How would you rate the presidents at this point, if you can rate them, that the ones that you've seen and that you'd like to see come back, if possible?
Well, this president lacks the kind of courage I'd like to see. I think that he's playing it safe, and he may survive it and land on his feet, but I don't see any great vision.
Do you see any prospects? We look at the Tea Party. What do you see? Do you see the future of the Tea Party? This seems to be off the charts in terms of the kind of collaboration we used to see, collaboration in the sense of everyone making money and the system working. It seemed the Tea Party was actually ready to bring the system down.
Yeah, they seem to be nihilists, it's true. But I do think that they can be ignored and they can be exposed.
Well, do you think this is going to happen in the next election?
I hope so.
As you're now starting your 92nd year, maybe you have some last words to our listeners of encouragement or suggestions for what they can do and to make this a better country.
Vote right, ask the right questions, care about what's happening to our country and our fellow man. Let's remember we are our brother's keeper.
And our sister's keepers. And you are one of our great sisters.
You are very kind.
Well, Helen Thomas, I just want to thank you so much for everything you have contributed to our betterment. And I'm not going to, I don't think you would want another 91 years, but I wish you the best of health. And thank you so much for being our guest again on Takes on the World.
I'll just my halo.
Take care.